much you want to bet?
I don't bet.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I'll give you 3-1 odds.
Nope.
5-1.
Nope.
10-1.
You're on.
Away we go. It is the Thirsty Thursday edition of the Bet the Board NFL podcast, and we can put last week's NFL Week 14 officially in the rearview mirror. What a game we saw on Monday night to wrap things up. Hopefully you were able to capitalize on the slight lean we gave you on the pod with Atlanta, plus those generous points plus 13. Be joined in just a second by Payne Insider, and as always, the Thursday format breakdown, a lot of the big games. For the Sunday slate, we will, of course, cover the Thursday night showdown between St. Louis and Arizona. Unfortunately, though, not going to have time to get to your questions. Thank you for submitting them, as always. Wanted to do these games in a little bit more detail. But, Payne, you ready to dive in and find a couple winners for NFL Week 15?
That is the goal, my friend.
Well, we've definitely seen a major move on the Thursday night game. Who knows where this number will be when we get to its full-scale discussion about 20 minutes from now, but let's start at the top of the board and try and hit on each of these games this week, as we do from time to time. Oakland, Kansas City. Kansas City, a 10.5-point favorite at home as they try and get revenge against the Raiders. Total in this game at 41.5. Oakland, we can make the case, you know, comes in off one of their more dominating efforts of the entire season, beating San Francisco at home as an 8.5-point underdog, winning that one 24-13.
Yeah, I think we see kind of what Kansas City is a little bit once they've stepped up in competition. Not a great team, not overly dynamic on the offensive side of the ball. So I think most people will look at this open 12. You're now down to 10.5. So it's extremely tough to lay the lumber here with Kansas City. The only question mark here is we've seen what Oakland does off big victories. They laid an egg in St. Louis just a couple weeks ago off their big Thursday night win against this very Kansas City team. I'm not running to take the points here. Questionable is Jamaal Charles. How healthy is he? Knee, ankle, banged up just a little bit. But this is, by all purposes, a must-win game, and I think we saw some inflation in the market at the opening price because of that on Kansas City. But I am not running to bet this. If I had to bet it, I think I would look towards Kansas City if you can get a 9.5 or 10. But at this current number, nothing for me.
Yeah, tough, tough game. Kansas City obviously with revenge. Oakland has played some of their better football in divisional games. And some real interesting trends if you look at this particular rivalry and the way things have gone. Oakland actually 11-3-1 against the spread at Arrowhead Stadium going all the way back to 2000. The Raiders are 20-5 against the number the past 25 divisional road games they've played, something to keep in mind. And Kansas City actually has struggled, maybe a little bit overvalued at home in divisional games. They've gone just 1-8 straight up, 2-7 against the spread. But like you said, the strength of the situation here would be Kansas City or pass. It would mark the first time since 2006 the Chiefs would close as a double-digit chalk. So some things to keep in mind. For a team, though, that's no stranger pain to being an underdog, the Jacksonville Jaguars on the cusp of making NFL history this week as they will be installed as an underdog for the 42nd straight game, one shy of the record set by the 2007 and 2009 St. Louis Rams. Baltimore, a 14-point favorite total in this game. We'll call it 45.5 consensus. Still plenty of 45s to be found offshore.
This Baltimore's a little banged up. Extremely physical game last week against Miami. I think most people will run to back them. Jacksonville, at this point, not really an ATS machine either. Torrey Smith looks banged up, so that's, again, one of those guys, Torrey Smith, DeSean Jackson, Mike Wallace, they just create so much space for others. At this number, at 14, it'll be interesting to see how high this does climb. If it gets to 14.5, you know, the back door is open virtually the entire game. This is one of those games that I kind of just ignore and pass. I'm not really doing anything with this, but I think you will eventually see professional money come in on Jacksonville in this spot. It's just tough to fade Baltimore at home. It's typically where they play their best. But, again, that secondary is an issue. Bortles likes to chuck the ball deep down the field. Maybe you find some opportunities down the field, and you can definitely exploit Baltimore there. It would be tough to lay this number. For me, it would be Jacksonville or pass.
Yeah, I think the only way to look here is towards the dog, but much like you, I've kind of largely ignored this game. Baltimore eyes on a much bigger prize, not only trying to win the division, but get into the playoffs. So, you know, them getting out of M&T Bank Stadium with a victory, more so than a cover, probably the priority. Baltimore's actually struggled in this role, just 1-6 against the number as double-digit home favorites going back to 2010. From a game that probably doesn't offer a lot of intrigue to a game that really does now, especially the way Atlanta played on Monday night, and of course some injury concerns for the Falcons. Looking at Pittsburgh, a 2-point favorite total in this game set at 54, should be points aplenty in the Georgia Dome, but can Atlanta duplicate the effort we saw in the second half against Green Bay, playing on a short week against the Steelers team, who looked like an offensive juggernaut in that second half of a decisive victory against the Cincinnati Bengals?
Yeah, I think when we talk about this one again, not much interest from a side perspective. For me, it would be the total, and it's pretty square, but, you know, that fast track, both the way these defenses are playing or not playing, so to speak, and the way the offenses are playing, I think this has the makings of some points scored here. The only question is, this is a big game for both. You know, they're going to want to entrench themselves in this game, get the ground game going a little bit. But I just think that surface, that track, the way these offenses are playing right now, the over makes a lot of sense at 54. And if you are going to go on the over, you know, I don't think there's any sense in waiting. Couple question marks. Obviously, Julio Jones, they're saying it's a hip pointer, which is basically just a deep bruise. I think he ends up playing, but he'll have to deal with some of the pain. So that'll be something to monitor, you know, come Sunday.
Look at Pain Insider trying to bust out that medical degree there to give us a full-scale analysis of the Julio Jones injury. I'll ask a bigger conceptual question when you look at this total. If Julio is sidelined in a worst-case scenario for those folks that want to go over, does it get you to shy away completely from backing this total, knowing that Harry Douglas probably has to step into that secondary role and Roddy White becomes the featured receiver for the Falcons?
It's definitely, on my scale, definitely worth a few points to the total. There's no doubt about that. But again, these defenses are very poor. So the only issue there would be if you're looking at this game come Sunday, my feeling is it continues to tick upwards, and then you would have the removal of Julio Jones because he will be a game-time decision. I don't think anything will break on the injury front before then. Then you're looking at a total pass for me because I think this will get to 56 at some point.
And this game, actually, only the 11th meeting between these two franchises going all the way back to 1980. So not a lot of familiarity between them. Should be interesting to see how things play out in the Georgia Dome. Houston Indy, a showdown in the AFC South. Of course, Indy winning this game would allow them to clinch the division with two games left to go. We talked about this game a little bit on Monday. Seen 6.5. Every time it gets to 7, there is major resistance in the market. The Houston Texans have not won in their illustrious franchise history in Indianapolis. And 0-12 straight up, 4-8 against the spread. Maybe this is their breakthrough opportunity. But what are your thoughts on this particular game, Houston, as a potentially live underdog?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the Monday podcast, and I think 7's the number you need to go here on the Texans. And I think, you know, you'll see some – every time you see a little, you know, market manipulation, it does get to 7 immediately, as you alluded to. There is a buy on the dog here. I think this is Houston's season in a nutshell right here at this spot. I think they have enough weapons offensively in an effective ground game to keep this tight. So for me, it would be Houston, especially at the key number of 7 there for me.
Indy has had a ton of success as a home favorite, especially in the division, 9-1 straight up against the AFC South opponents and 9-1 against the spread during those 10 such opportunities. So Indy's definitely been able to make some money, of course. Having the right side last week with Cleveland allows a little bit of flexibility to stay away from a potential Colts game here. Cincy and Cleveland, speaking of those same Browns, the big news, Johnny Manziel officially named the starting quarterback for the Browns. Brian Hoyer sidelined for being pretty much ineffective and a waste of space out there at the pivot position. Cincinnati, Marvin Lewis opening his mouth all week long, and you have seen the market adjust. Cincy from a 1-point favorite, Cleveland now a 1.5-point chalk. A little bit of money on the under from 44.5 down to a consensus of 44, but seeing some 43.5 start to pop in the market as well.
This is an interesting game. I don't really have a huge downgrade the way Hoyer's playing to Manziel, and any little bit of downgrade that it would be, I think, kind of gets alleviated with this being Manziel's first start and not a lot of film on him. And basically just Cincinnati. We've talked about this team, and I know what their record is, and I know they're in first place in the division. I just don't see anything I like from this Cincinnati Bengals team. I really don't. And that's kind of what concerns me. Some defensive issues all season long. They can't stop the run. Vontaze Burfict now out. You're starting middle linebacker, so that doesn't help anything. This will be an interesting game. I noticed earlier today they anointed Hill the full-time starter over Giovanni Bernard. So that'll be interesting. That's probably why we have seen this move to the under here. Cincinnati is going to want to establish the ground game and move forward in that direction. I would be a little leery of this move. This feels to me a lot like the Philadelphia game last week a little bit. So I wouldn't draw complete conclusions that Cleveland is the side right now. But for me at this price, nothing right now.
I mean, we talked a little bit, Payne, about it, and you brought up a compelling point earlier in the week as we go through some of our notes. Maybe an interesting teaser leg if you wanted to try and move on Cincinnati, thinking that this could move towards a pick'em as we get closer to Sunday to lock up a number at 7.5 or better.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're looking at the market right now, you're looking at Pinnacle and Chris. Now, obviously, they're the highest on the board in terms of wanting to back Cleveland. This day and age, the way the market is set up, those are typically your best books to throw phonies at because everybody moves on air these days. So wouldn't be completely shocked if Cincinnati becomes a side come Sunday. But if you were to lock in those teasers, you know, you get your six-point teaser right now through the seven, and just figure out what to do with it later. You'll have plenty of options, in my opinion.
Well, and one thing before we get into the Miami-New England game and the rest of the board, for a lot of our listeners, you know, some of them definitely understand the terminology, others still getting familiar with sports gambling lingo. Can you explain a little bit to some of the folks out there what moving on air would mean and why that's so important to know what the sharp books are showing and how some of the markets will, some of the other sports books will actually mirror off of them?
Yeah, I mean, you've been behind the counter and you kind of know how the market moves in specific sports books, how they operate. For me, you know, there's a handful of sports books that really open the market and really determine the market. So just because a book like Pinnacle takes action, other sports books without ever even taking a bet will likely just fall in line and copy that number, essentially, you know, moving on air. That book might not have taken a bet at all on that game or that specific side, but they'll fall in line with a sharp book that did.
We had a running joke at Caesars under a manager that's no longer there. That joke was, if MGM took a big bet, Caesars would move their number, but if Caesars took a big bet, they would not move on the liability they actually had in-house. So know all too well exactly some of the mindset out there when it comes to moving on air for games rather than actually booking to the customers willing to plunk down their own money in front of your own eyes. But Miami-New England, clearly some of the luster and shine has worn off of this Dolphins team, now fighting for their playoff lives. Banged up on the offensive and defensive side, New England looks like an absolute juggernaut, obliterating everything in its path. You're seeing New England a 7.5-point favorite here. Total from 49 on the open down to 48, even a 47.5 out there. Hard to argue when you see what Miami's trends have been towards the under. You know, 9-1 to the under their last 10 December games, 12-2 the past 15, or 12-2-1 the past 15 divisional games, 8 straight on the road. So you can make a case there, but you want to back the Dolphins in this spot, Payne? You've had an outstanding read on this team all year long.
Typically, I would run to bet the Dolphins on this game. I would be lined up at the sports book, plunking your money down on 7.5 and 8. I think that will probably be the side come Sunday, but not a side that I'll have going to the window with. They're just extremely banged up right now. When you're looking at this linebacking core, the potential for Koemisi being out, Jenkins being out is there, and this isn't week one where you're facing a Rob Gronkowski where you would literally let him play 5 yards in front of you and make him deter and make him cut on that knee. He's a different breed right now. He's a different guy. He's fully healthy. So Miami is going to see a much better offensive version of Rob Gronkowski and the Patriots. LaFell absolutely acclimated to this offense now. And Miami is extremely banged up. It'll be interesting to see if Jamar Taylor can go in the secondary. Cortland Finnegan claims he is going to be playing, but with that, has said that he's likely retiring. So a guy, you know, 2 games away from potentially retiring, I don't know how mentally involved he's going to be. They've talked about bringing Jason Trusnik in as a starter, which, again, removes him from the special teams unit. And the last time that happened, we saw what happened when Miami traveled to Buffalo, allowing all those special teams points. He is their special teams captain. So That could be a vital loss to the Miami Dolphins special teams. This is just not a game that, right now I'm looking to play. The offensive line is really struggling right now, specifically Dallas Thomas at right tackle. He's about the Dolphins' eighth or ninth best lineman. He could not cut it at left guard, but with the injury situation to Brandon Albert, who was their best offensive player this year, they had to slide Juwan James over to left tackle, bring Dallas Thomas off the bench to right tackle, and he just, there's about 7 to 8 plays a game where he just gets absolutely dominated, and it causes lots of issues for this Dolphins team. So right now, I am not betting, running to bet Miami, but likely the professional side come Sunday.
Yeah, I have to imagine those hooks will start to disappear. Strength of the situation, but as you said, sometimes X's and O's, or oftentimes they should trump that, and I think you've laid out a pretty compelling case to stay away from that game. Big story in the next game, the absence of their starting quarterback. Carolina, a 3-point favorite. We'll call them 3 minus $1.25 right now. Total in this game, 41. Obviously, Cam Newton will be expected to miss, or is ruled officially out as he tries to recover a bit from the unfortunate car accident earlier this week. Derek Anderson gets his second start of the season, lo and behold, against the same team he started against week one in the form of the Tampa Bay Bucks. You've seen the market reflect that change from 43 down to 41, and as we alluded to, 3 minus $1.25, down from 5.5. What do we make as far as a power rating differential between Derek Anderson and Cam Newton?
Derek Anderson is he's a chucker, and he got a big win on the road earlier against Tampa Bay. I think if that game probably lasted another 3 or 4 minutes, Tampa Bay ends up squeaking that game out. But this is interesting because this line opened 5, 5.5, and now the reopen was 3, and we're seeing some money come in on Carolina, as you mentioned, out to about $1.25 on the favorite. So my number definitely has Cam being worth more than 2 points to Anderson. So this is interesting to kind of see unfold here. One thing that I do like a little bit here, and I know the total's trended downwards, but if I could bet this game, and it looks like the weather's going to be halfway decent, I would look towards the over here. I really would. I know everybody talked about how Tampa Bay's defense was coming around the past few weeks, but they really hadn't played anybody. And when you talk about these two quarterbacks, both of them like to chuck the ball. Both of them make mistakes. Could see a potential for some short fields. That would be the way I would lean, but I think you probably wait a little bit, let the market overreact to the backup quarterback. But I'm keeping my eye on the over in this game.
It's an interesting angle to try and take. Yeah, you talk about Tampa Bay not really playing anybody. I'll make the case that I'm not sure a Derek Anderson-led Carolina offense would fall into a different classification, but as you and I both know, Derek Anderson is known for big plays, both for his team and against his team while he's under center. So definitely an interesting look there. A team that I don't think anybody in the public is going to want to back in the next game, the much maligned Washington Redskins, a 6.5-point underdog. Total in this game, 46, when they head to MetLife Stadium to take on the Giants. A bit of a revenge scenario, a game the Redskins were boat raced in their own building on a Thursday night earlier this season. It looks by all accounts Colt McCoy is going to go at quarterback there, and I believe you have an injury update on DeSean Jackson as well.
Yeah, for me, I know we talked about this a little bit on Monday, and I've actually already stepped out on this game. I took Washington +7, -15. And for me, you know, you do have the revenge angle. I don't, you know, like to play into that too much, but it's a division game. I think you're getting a lot of value here. The look-ahead line, I believe, was Giants -3.5 last week. You get opposite end spectrum in terms of performances last week. So I think there is value here. And you get DeSean Jackson back by what I read. And he's just one of the handfuls of guys. There's only 4 or 5 guys like him in the entire world. And as long as he's on the field, it creates space for the rest of the offense. Colt McCoy is a go. 7 just feels like a lot in this spot. It really does. And when you kind of dig a little deeper, this kind of feels like a spot where Washington shows up. It looks like they're ready to hit somebody. And there was a fight that broke out earlier this week in practice between Andre Roberts and the cornerback Breland. I think everyone's a little they just want to get up and go in this game. I think Washington does show up. Everyone seems a little fiery. And Washington, for me, it's one of, I think, a decent play this week. And I would, it's Washington or nothing, that's for sure.
I would agree there. It's definitely the Redskins are nothing. And if you talk to Redskins fans or those close to the organization, some would say the only fight they've shown in the last 5 to 6 weeks came this week in practice. So we'll see if it translates onto the field, given that the pathetic performance we saw on Sunday against the St. Louis Rams. But, of course, that Rams defense, a much more formidable task to try and navigate through than this Giants defensive front. Next game. Obviously, we're seeing a clear divide already between the pros and the Joes. Buffalo, a 4.5-point home underdog. There are some fives and 5.5s out there for recreational bettors against the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay has been a juggernaut when you look at their ability to cover at home, but a team that hasn't exactly gone out there and blown out competition lately on the road. I mean, we saw them struggle against the Vikings. And Buffalo, a very stiff defense that may pose some problems for Aaron Rodgers and company.
Yeah, this is, you know, it's pretty easy. It's Buffalo or nothing here, and that's really what it comes down to. Are you going to be on Buffalo or are you passing the game? Because I really think this is the side. You got a nice home field advantage here, especially this year. This is likely Buffalo's season right here in a nutshell. You get Green Bay on a short week, traveling to a non-conference opponent. It'll be interesting to see how much they're involved in this. You're going to need Buffalo's offense to show up here. The ground game has been lacking with Kyle Orton under center. Not a lot of threat for going deep, so teams are stacking the box. The other thing here is, can Buffalo get pressure this week with their front four? And I know if you look at a lot of the metrics and a lot of the efficiency numbers, everybody is going to see Buffalo's secondary as being one of the best in all of the NFL. But it's pretty simple. The linebackers don't have to blitz. The cornerbacks don't have to blitz. They get pressure with their front four. We saw last week, though, they didn't record a sack for the first time in over a year, could not get to Peyton Manning, and voila, they allowed nearly 9 yards per pass. And that's going to be the issue here. Can Buffalo get pressure this week? If they can, this is going to be, I think, an easy cover for Buffalo. I'm still debating if I'm going to play this game, but at 4.5 or better, I think Buffalo is the side.
Yeah, and we talk a little bit or a lot about overreaction all the time. Buffalo, of course, scored 14 points late in that game against Denver. Game they did trail 24-3. We found a way to get in the back door. What are we talking for a number here? Do you think we're easily able to get 6 in this particular spot based on perception if Buffalo ends up losing that game 24-3 to Denver instead of 24-17?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a weird game to gauge. You know, Buffalo does get the cover. It looked pretty fortunate there on the athletic Kyle Orton flop into the end zone late. But
much like I'd imagine you look on your turkey bowl going for that goal line plunge late in the game to beat up on your aunts and uncles.
You know, Buffalo did outgain Denver by over 100 yards. So they were in the game. The key here is Kyle Orton. Can they sustain the drives? That's been the issue all year. Third down offense, it's been a real struggle for them. Can they run the ball? And that's going to be the key here. If they can run the ball, which they haven't been doing great lately, they're going to have a shot. This is definitely the side. Professionals are going to be on Buffalo. I think if you can get 4.5 or better, that's likely the right side. Not sure where this is going to close. It is the 1 p.m. It's not a standalone 4 o'clock. The public is all over Green Bay, but the public got spurned last week, so it'll be interesting to see how much support shows for Green Bay. I don't think we get anywhere near that 5.5 or key number of 6, but I think Buffalo's the right side here.
And, of course, as we're recording this, we see Chris, one of the larger offshore books for those folks unfamiliar, going actually down to 4 instead of the other direction. So, much like you, Payne, I mean, all of our Vegas listeners definitely can grab 5 everywhere in the city. Offshore 4.5, make sure you want to grab that number before it ticks down to 4. Now, the other game we saw, the next game that involves two teams from the NFC North, we saw some money come in earlier today on the underdog. The Detroit Lions, a 7.5-point home favorite, we'll call it 7 in some locations now. Total in this game, anywhere from 42.5 upwards of 43.5. Minnesota took a little bit of money in the market. Of course, the first meeting between these two teams, Teddy Bridgewater looked overmatched, and so did the Vikings' offensive line trying to keep pressure off their young quarterback.
Yeah, it's a real tough game for me to gauge. Minnesota has been winning games lately, but I don't think they've been really impressive. If you dig really deep into some of those numbers, go back and watch the game. I know they beat Carolina. I think they're out first down nearly 2-1. Last week, again, not overly impressive against the Jets. So it leaves me a little nervous running to back Minnesota here. It is going to be the side. It'll be the professional side for sure. Ndamukong Suh missed practice for the first time ever. So that will be the real key here. He's under the weather. My guess is he will be out there playing come Sunday, but who knows how sick or how ill he is. When we talked about this first meeting, the Minnesota Vikings offensive line just got caved in all day long. Not a lot of improvements from this Minnesota offensive line, so that's kind of what scares me here in this spot. We talked about this similar to last week. If you don't have an offensive line, you don't have a real ground game, Detroit's going to be much tougher to beat. But I think, Minnesota will be the professional side here. I'm not running to bet this game yet at this point. I think the under creates has some value also, barring, your typical Minnesota Vikings the last few weeks where they get some some crazy scores. Their totals the last few weeks have flown over, but not due to their offense, that's for sure.
Yeah, special teams and defensive touchdowns have become par for the course when you handicap the Minnesota Vikings, and I would agree with you. I think under makes the most compelling case. Of course, in Ndamukong Suh's absence, it does change the dynamic of this a little bit, but maybe if the Vikings can stay on the field and pick up some yards, it allows the game to stay under that total. But just to reset for those listeners tuning in, you're listening to Payne Insider on the other end of the line. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. See my work at toddstake.com and see Payne's outstanding work at payneinsider.com. Payne, a team that I refuse to recognize as an NFL caliber franchise, has taken money from the professionals this week, and it is in the form of the New York Jets, who have gone from a 1-point underdog on the open now to a 3-point favorite, albeit you can lay 3 even against the Tennessee Titans. Oh my, what this says about the Titans more so than it does the New York Football Jets.
We talked about this on Monday as one of the games that would be on the move, and lo and behold, the Jets fully moved. You're looking at 3, or you're looking at 2.5 minus 25. At this stage in the game, I don't think either team's worth a bet. It's pretty interesting to feel like you have to lay 2.5 or 3 here on the road with Geno Smith. Now, I know he came out earlier this week and said he's had some Pro Bowl-like performances in his career. I have never seen any of them, but he's confident, so you have to like a confident quarterback. And really, this is more so a play against Tennessee. It's a play against their locker room, how those players feel about Ken Wisenhunt. It's pretty shocking to see how quickly this has turned. And I know you're close to Clay Travis, who covers this team pretty well. And he's called for Wisenhunt's job, which is this early in the campaign. It's pretty interesting to see the disconnect between the players and their coach.
Yeah, I would say that Ken Wisenhunt's stay in Nashville may not be that long, but if you look at some of the offshore books actually booking the price on will he be retained for next season, he is a slight favorite to come back. Then again, if we're going to go off of Clay Travis's judgment for NFL or college coaches, I think Clay would be running 15 major Division I college football programs, somehow coaching them all himself, as the only one qualified to take over those teams. Denver-San Diego, a game in the AFC West that could be an elimination-type scenario for the Chargers, who look anything but elite offensively with a pretty anemic 7-point outburst against the Patriots. Their other 7 points came virtue of a defensive touchdown. 4-point home dogs against the Broncos. Total in this game, 50.5.
This is tough. I obviously would like to go to the window here with a San Diego ticket, but the offensive line finally caved in. You're now on your 5th starting center. We know how vital that position is. The coverages, the schemes, the center is key. Calls all that stuff out, and it looks like they're having issues there, obviously. Ryan Matthews banged up once again. It'll be interesting to see if he does go. I would love to have a San Diego ticket. In years past, I would be running to bet San Diego here, but it's a different market. This is San Diego's Super Bowl, obviously. This is a must-win game here. I'm not going to be betting Denver, but it's San Diego or pass, and I think I need to mull this game over a little more before I figure out if I'm going to be invested in the Lightning Bolts.
Yeah, interesting, too, in this game, and I know we talk a little bit about time slots. This game will go at 4:05 Eastern, not 4:25, so I'm not sure you'll see the same amount of public money that you would had this been in the slightly later standalone time slot going at the same time as the Jets in Tennessee. Well, Minnesota, Detroit, and then, of course, the next game we're about to discuss will go at 4:25 when Seattle plays host to San Francisco. The Seahawks, a ridiculous double-digit favorite in this particular spot, a far cry from where they were a 1.5-point underdog on Thanksgiving against the 49ers. Total in this game, open 39, down to 38, see some 37.5. I have an angle on this game I fully intend to play. Interested to get your thoughts and if you can make a case for the dog or if Seattle boat races the 49ers for the second time in just a few weeks.
You know, clearly, you know, the value would be on San Francisco here. But, again, I think this, you know, plays its hand into something similar to Tennessee is, you know, is this team still there? This would be their last hurrah. This is a must-win game for San Francisco. And it might be a little similar to what we saw with Cam Newton in some of those outliers. Is Kaepernick going to run the ball? Are they going to have designed runs for him? It seems like they keep the training wheels on until they absolutely have to unleash him, and they save him for playoff time. Well, playoff time doesn't happen unless you get a W here. So maybe we see a little more of Kaepernick on the ground, which will get him confidence and I think have him throwing the ball a little better. Too many turnovers of late. He's not a sit-back in the pocket passer, and that's kind of what Harbaugh and the San Francisco offense has made him. So that's always the dynamic there. If he's running, I think, you know, they stay within this number. I'm running to bet. There is going to be some weather in this game. So maybe, you know, I'd be interesting to hear your angle. I think it's probably looking towards a team total, potentially.
Yeah, I just think that probably does make the most sense. I mean, you look at San Francisco, their struggles offensively, how well Seattle has played on the defensive side of the ball. And with San Francisco's team total widely available at 14.5 now, I'll take my chances that the San Francisco offense doesn't all of a sudden get it together, especially against Seattle. They know how important each of these games are. And while, yes, some people may say this could be a letdown traveling back across the country, I don't think that'll be the case, especially against one of their more heated divisional rivals, a chance to put the final nail in the coffin. And some interesting numbers here when you talk about side and total in this particular matchup. Seattle's now actually covered 7 straight against the San Francisco 49ers. Under's gone 6-1 in the past 7 meetings. And you look at the Niners, they've struggled in the Emerald City, 2-10 against the number their past 12 trips there. Seattle 13-2 against the number in divisional home games since 2009. But an interesting note, the Niners haven't been double-digit underdogs paying since beating the Eagles back on October 2nd, 2011. So San Francisco's last guess, but for me, I think if they're going to win this, it's got to be their defense, and I'm not sure they can win allowing Seattle to score anything more than 10 points in this particular football game.
Yeah, you know, that makes some sense. I'm definitely not running to lay the points, obviously. This number, this price is extremely inflated. But sometimes, you know, if you don't know the effort you're going to get from San Francisco, there's a reason for this price. So I won't be on this game in any facet, I don't believe.
Cue the barking dog sound effects, maybe an omen to try and back San Francisco in this particular spot. And what we'll call maybe the marquee game of the entire Sunday slate, a series dominated by the road team in the NFC East. Philadelphia, 3-20 right now is the consensus as they play. Oh, you know, we'll call them 3.5 even for Philadelphia as they're playing host to Dallas. Of course, we saw these two teams meet on Thanksgiving, a game where Dallas was absolutely embarrassed. But the Cowboys, you can argue, have played their best football away from home and a chance to get a bit of revenge against the Philadelphia team playing Dallas a week after meeting the Seahawks.
Yeah, absolutely. Revenge on the mind of the Cowboys embarrassed at home on Thanksgiving Day. Dallas, the only undefeated team on the road this season so far. Professionals are on this side. There's no doubt about that. It would be a little easier for me to go to the window with a Cowboys ticket had Philadelphia and their offense not looked so anemic last week. I'm not a believer in the Dallas defense. I think this is a Dallas defense that Sanchez is capable of beating. So that's what's going to keep me on the sidelines here with Dallas. This kind of feels like, in terms of line movement and situation, eerily similar to the Patriots-Packers game a few weeks back, where at kick it got down to 2.5, and I laid it with the Packers. If this does get to 2.5, I don't believe it will, but if it does, I would be really, really interested in buying Philadelphia.
Look at you taking shots at the Dallas defense after you threw that Atlanta Falcons brick wall defense under the bus on the Monday podcast. They did hold the Packers, to your free information, Payne, to 43 points on Monday night, so that was a pretty stellar defensive performance from them.
Not bad. Not bad.
You do what you can. And, of course, the Monday night game between the Saints and the Bears, if you're expecting to hear our breakdown, well, you're just going to have to tune in on the Monday edition of the podcast as we talk about those two doormats playing out the stretch, yet somehow the Saints still find themselves in the thick of a divisional race. And, of course, the Thursday night game. You waited patiently for our breakdown, and we weren't sure where this number was going to get to before we had a chance to cover it. The St. Louis Rams, now a six-point favorite against the Arizona Cardinals. Total in this game sits at 40.5. One of the largest moves you're going to see this time of year in the NFL, especially through a key number. St. Louis opened as a 2.5-point favorite, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight from the professionals continuing to lay the lumber with this Rams defense.
Yeah, we talked about this again on Monday with a little teaser. We didn't want to ruin things for the listeners, but apparently we probably did. We alluded that the professionals were running to bet and grab and lay the 2.5 and even 3 early in the week. The professionals are all over St. Louis here, obviously. It's tough to invest in the game at this point. The under has seen some professional money, and you know, maybe you know, we take something out of your playbook there, Todd, and we look at the team total under in Arizona, 17.5.
Real quick though, Payne, you do realize my playbook is extensive as the original Tecmo Bowl. I only offer 4 plays in that particular playbook.
I think there's some value when still in this game, and I think it would come on the Arizona team total under 17.5. I think it's vital to get that hook. So that would probably be the way that I would look in this game. And when you really talk about how this Arizona team isn't very good, let's just break this down. We've been talking about it for a month now. They weren't overly good with Carson Palmer. Bruce Arians deserves, you know, every award known to mankind, how he gets these guys to continue to show up. He's an aggressive coach. Players love playing for him, but they're just decimated with injuries at this stage in the game. Stanton isn't that guy. You know, he's about to be 31. Nothing's changing on that front. And when you break down Stanton this season and his starts in going on the road, some of those scores are a little misleading. And if you break down and remove the defensive scores for Arizona and the special teams scores and the special teams and defense putting the offense in the right positions, and you subtract those points, if you look at Stanton and how he's marched his offense down the field, 13 points against the Giants, 6 against Denver, 3 against Seattle, and 11 versus Atlanta. Taking his offense and marching them down the field, if you just include those points, Arizona's offense has mustered about 8 points per game under Stanton. So you can see why the professionals are all over St. Louis. And I know a lot of people, when they looked at the market and they saw this game at 3, they're thinking, man, we're purchasing St. Louis at an all-time high. I don't think they realized how bad Arizona was. And sometimes professionals will, you know, most people thought this was going to be the public side. It's kind of evened out a little bit, that which is pretty surprising to me. But St. Louis is the side here. But I think the best bet now that all this, that the market's moved so much, is looking at that team total Arizona under 17.5.
Well, I think it also begs a more interesting question. I know we've talked a little bit about buying points, and of course there are plenty of detractors out there who aren't afraid to let us know their opinions on the particular topic. But there were some of the largest groups out there with buy orders on the Rams willing to lay up to $1.30 to get it to that key number 3. Obviously, when you look at the market going all the way to 6, paying between 10 and 15 cents to try and buy 3 points, I would probably say in the NFL in this day and age was a pretty good investment, Payne.
You know, I think, again, it comes down to having the information, knowing the strength of the position. And that's one thing when you hear about a lot of these games that we talk about. Obviously, that we're giving you the right sides, but it's tough to kind of give the information of how strong some of these positions are. And one thing I can say, when you're looking at key numbers and gauging whether to buy on or buy off or are they worth it, most people like to use reference points of every single game ever played at the number of 3. Well, you know, every game's different. And so if you have an edge, and this game, you know, dictates that there was an edge, I think anybody saying that they had St. Louis -3, -30 in their back pocket right now is a bad bet. would be an idiot, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things when you look at it, and like you said, you don't know exactly the strength of position, or most of the people out there that are betting these games don't have access to some of the same information we do in terms of trying to know when the right opportunity to move is, and that's part of the reason that we feel the podcast has been pretty successful, trying to educate folks and help give them some of those tools that they can count on each week to get them to the window. And Payne, I think this may go down as one of the longest podcasts we've done, even without user-generated questions this week. So any final parting remarks before we get together on Monday to talk about the Bears and Saints as folks head into a busy weekend, and probably more so on the NFL side with some public dollars entering the market, knowing that you only have one college game on Saturday between Army and Navy to whet that football appetite?
No, I feel good. I think we broke down the card pretty extensively. We touched on a lot of games, touched on a lot of positions that will be taken by the professionals come Sunday. I think we did a pretty good job of educating those for Week 15.
The easiest part is figuring out sometimes where these numbers are going to go and who the sides are. Some of the more difficult challenges become getting to the window with those tickets. For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me there on Twitter at Todd Furman. This is your Thursday edition of the Bet the Board podcast. And remember, use the hashtag AskBetTheBoard throughout the course of the week in your NFL studies. We'll have a chance to get to some of those questions in greater detail next week. But in the meantime, let's find some winners, and hopefully we'll see you guys at the window.